Hello, my name's Tom Boone.
And I'm Joanna Bailey.
Welcome to a brand new episode of the Simple Flying Podcast, where we'll give you the lowdown on the latest news from the world of commercial aviation. Here's what we have for you this week.
Coming up today, I'll see why Boeing is concerned about further delays to the 777X program, while Tom looks at how you could get your hands on your very own Boeing 747.
Joe will look at Pratt & Whitney's latest engine problem, while I look at the latest legal drama aimed at Ryanair.
Finally, I'll tell you about a UK green energy company that wants to launch an airline.
So now you know what's in store, let's get on with the show. And Joe, Boeing 777X, tell me about it.
Absolutely. Well, this is obviously financial report time. It's the end of Q2, so we're all eagerly listening in to earnings calls and reading documents to see how everyone's doing. Someone that reported fairly recently was Boeing, and there were some interesting tidbits, but I'll go over their kind of headline figures first of all. So Boeing recorded $19 billion of revenue in Q2, and revenue for the commercial airplanes department, which is, of course, the one we're most interested in, increased to $8.8 billion, driven by higher 787 deliveries. Overall, they delivered 136 commercial aircraft, and they've already increased the production rate of the 787 Dreamliner to 4 per month. But they're not stopping there, because they intend to produce 5 per month by the end of this year, and they're ramping up to 10 per month within the next 3 years. The manufacturer still expects to deliver 70 to 80 airplanes from its current backlog this year, but it's also ramping up production on the narrowbody side, of course. The 737 program aims to produce 38 aircraft per month and expects to deliver to 400 to 450 this year. But then the target production rate is 50 aircraft a month by 2026. So some busy airplane builders over there in Seattle. Boeing also signed some important purchase agreements this past quarter for a grand total of 460 net orders. Of course, there was the big Air India order for 290 new aircraft, which included 190 Maxes, 20 Dreamliners, and 10 of the 777X. And then, of course, we've got the very exciting new entrant Riyadh Air, which ordered 39 aircraft. And Ryanair announced a significant order for up to 300 737 MAX 10 aircraft worth $40 billion. I should put on the end of that, not 40 billion chickens. But of course, a couple of those airplanes aren't actually in service yet, particularly the 737 MAX 10 and the 777X. Boeing admits that the timeline slip on the 737 MAX certification could start to have impacts beyond just being unable to deliver the jets to its customers on time. It's also flagged some potential risks in maintaining its order book for the flagship 777X, should there be any further delays to certification and its entry into service. So specifically from its earnings report, the company noted, if we remain unable to deliver 737 aircraft in China for an extended period, and or entry of service into service of the 777X, 737-7 and or 737-10 is further delayed, we may experience reductions to backlog and or significant order cancellations. And this is something, you know, they kind of have to tell their shareholders, because it is a risk that they need to be aware of. But there have been some order cancellations for the 777X already, although Boeing doesn't give a lot of detail in its report. So in stating its backlog to the end of June 2023, Boeing did note that it had had some aircraft cancellations, although those primarily related to the 737. But further in, it also says there has been a net decrease of 777X and 737 aircraft. Now, the 777X, you know, it's a new aircraft, and building a new aircraft isn't cheap, but the expenses have run even deeper. And this all goes back to the background of the 737 MAX crisis. So early in the project, Boeing expected to be able to certify the 777X as a derivative of the classic 777, grandfathering in most of the elements of the aircraft from its predecessors. Some technologies, the very new ones like the new engines, the unique folding wingtips, would still require require separate certification, but an awful lot of the systems and construction would just be waved through. However, concerns have been raised. EASA was one that raised red flags in 2021 regarding the lack of redundancy on some of the fly-by-wire systems. EASA said they wanted closer scrutiny of the project. And, you know, to be fair, there's a lot of brand new stuff on board. The empennages are new, the centre box, it's got a composite wing, the fuselage has been stretched, you know, the list goes on. And the FAA is going to be looking at the plane as if it were a new model. And I think rightly so. With the fallout from the 737 MAX crisis still kind of ringing loudly in its ears, it won't want to pass anything that's not up to scratch. So because of all this extra scrutiny, Boeing paused production on the 777X in 2022, and this has led to what aircraft manufacturers like to call abnormal production costs. Boeing expects these will total $1 billion by the time production restarts. So far, it's logged a total of $587 million. Despite all this, it still expects to deliver the first 777X in 2025, pending all these certification steps it has to go through. The 777-8 freighter, which it launched last year, is still expected to be ready to enter service in 2027. The MAX 7, on the other hand, was due to be certified before the end of this year, but Boeing has revealed that the timeline for entry into service has now slipped to 2024. It was hoped that the first operators would have it before the end of this year. The MAX 10 will begin its flight testing campaign later this year, and Boeing is hoping that one will enter service in 2024 as well. But, you know, you can see with the worry of potential order cancellations hanging over the plane maker, all these certifications and entry into service really can't come soon enough.
I'd have to agree. But moving on from airplanes yet to be built to aircraft that have already been built, I wanted to talk about the 747, which Boeing already is no longer making. So, you know, I want to ask the question to all our listeners, have you ever wanted to buy your own Boeing 747? Because, you know, I don't know where I'd put one, but I certainly would love to if I could afford it. But, you know, if you can afford it and have space for an aircraft such as a 747, now you might be in luck because Iraqi Airways is selling off two of its old 747s. So initial bids for the aircraft are going to start at around $500,000. If you want to bid, though, to show you're serious, you'll need to put down a deposit of $98,800 or thereabouts. So you can't just bid without, it's not like eBay where you just bid whatever without being able to show that you can. Obviously, though, you know, you've got a big problem if you do successfully bid for these aircraft because they're not airworthy and they're currently both parked, sat in the Tunisia's Tozeur Nefta International Airport. And they've been there for over three decades. So, you know, I don't think any amount of work is going to make them airworthy again. Certainly not an amount of work that would be worth paying to move them. So I guess your only options really, if you did want to say move a 747 to Frankfurt, would be to chop the wings off and maybe chop the fuselage in half and put it on a big barge. Who knows? But diving into the aircraft a little bit more, these are two different types of 747. So there's a 747-200C, and that is Yankee India Alpha George Golf Papa. And then there's also a 747-SP, that's Yankee India Alpha Lima Mike. So, you know, both of them previously flew for Iraq, also for the Iraqi government, but they've not been flown since 1990. This was when the Iraq war was on, of course. So leading up to the war, both of the jets were moved to Tunisia to avoid damage. You know, we've seen, just look back at this, the military coup in the I forget which country it was, but one of the African countries earlier this year, the Qatar Airways aircraft was completely destroyed. So obviously, you know, they wanted to avoid that, but then UN sanctions meant that the airline had to cease almost all operations. So it was never able to recover these 747s. You know, the interesting thing about the sale is that the sellers have explicitly stated that any buyer cannot use the aircraft for any political purpose, reproduction, or glorification of any personality in any way. Now, according to a lot of sources that I've read on the internet, this is a reference to Saddam Hussein, who, you know, he was the leader of Iraq from 1979 to 2003. And he personally flew on one of the aircraft during his earlier days in power. So, you know, what they're trying to avoid really is that you know, you buy the aircraft and then make a Saddam Hussein memorial in Tunisia or something. They have said that if such a thing does happen, they hold the rights to repossess the aircraft. Although, you know, given aircraft repossession in general, I would really love to see how this would all work. Who knows? But, you know, this wasn't the only 747 that Saddam Hussein flew in. He also was gifted, apparently, by a member of the Qatari royal family in 1997, another Boeing 747. You know, the gift was considered illegal according to the ongoing sanctions against Iraq, and apparently it promoted outrage to the United States. So, you know, it's really interesting to see this this whole what's going on with these aircraft, because I never knew that there were just two 747s sitting in Tunisia waiting for a rainy day. It also, you know, just off the top of my head, makes me think, why sell it now? If they've been there already for 30 years and they're unairworthy, it kind of sounds to me like somebody was sat in an office thinking, how can we make some cash? You know, rather than just, oh, we've got these, let's get rid of them. But, you know, who knows? I don't know exactly. It will be interesting to see, number one, if they're successfully sold, and then if they are, what happens to them.
Absolutely. And I know if I win the lottery this weekend, exactly what I'm doing with my money.
Because I reckon
if I knocked down my house, I could just about park a 747 SP from front to back of my garden. So we'd just live in that. That's fine.
I mean, I'm sure there's nicer 747s that you could probably buy with that money, though.
I'll keep that in mind. Maybe I'll get two. So we've talked about Pratt & Whitney an awful lot on the podcast, and we've written about it even more on simpleflying.com. But poor old Pratt & Whitney really can't catch a break. You know, they've been grappling with supply chain issues that have meant longer than expected service times on the popular GTF engine. This has led to situations where airlines have had to wet lease in capacity to cope with grounded aircraft. There have been schedule changes caused by lack of engines, that notably at KLM Cityhopper as it waits for engines for the Embraer E2. It was even linked with the failure of Go First in India, and Air Astana's CEO called it a chronic illness. But a few weeks ago, the engine maker released a roadmap that was supposed to be the plan to solving the GTF problems. This included increasing the time on wing through longer life parts, as well as expanding MRO capabilities. You know, everything was kind of planned out and ready. But now it faces another hurdle, because it's had to recall around 1,200 engines for inspection right on top of the peak summer travel season. So the engine maker says it needs to check these engines for microscopic cracks caused by contaminants used in parts of the power units. This comes after Pratt & Whitney discovered amounts of contamination were present in the metal used in the engine's high-pressure turbine discs. They first discovered the problem during the probe of an engine failure on a Vietnam Airlines A321ceo. This was back in March 2020. And in that case, a contaminated high-pressure turbine stage 1 disc failed. Their initial analysis said that this could be a more widespread problem, but that the regular routine shop maintenance visits would be soon enough to inspect for the flaw. However, they've relooked at the data, and it's made them concerned that this might not be soon enough. In fact, 200 aircraft engines will need to be returned to it by the end of the summer, and then there's going to be another 1,000 returned to them by this time next year. Some, of course, will be within their usual maintenance cycle, so airlines can plan for that, but an awful lot will be much sooner than they expected, which could potentially lead to some schedule disruptions. So the affected aircraft are the ones flying with GTF engines manufactured between 2015 and 2020. Brand new aircraft, of course, are not affected. Those are completely reworked engines. And there are a lot of airlines flying with these aircraft. You know, some of the notable operators include Wizz Air, Delta, United, Hawaiian, JetBlue. At the moment, airlines have said they don't know if this will be disruptive to their schedules and networks. But of course, they don't really know what they don't know until it's established how long the fix takes. The CEO, Greg Hayes, told the Wall Street Journal that he was made aware of this issue back in the middle of July, and he said at the time, if we didn't address this, there was going to be a risk out there. He also said early indications suggested that individual aircraft may be out of service for up to 60 days. Among the few slivers of positive news out of all this is that Pratt's inspections to date have yielded very few discs, actually less than 1% of the 3,000 they've examined, that needed immediate replacement. On their earnings call last month, Chris Callio, who's their chief operating officer, said he expects the fallout rate, meaning those that require full turbine replacements, to be very low. Of course, that doesn't really help the airlines that are now having to return engines unexpectedly. And I just wish poor old Pratt & Whitney has a better 2024 than it's had this year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can really have a worse 2024 than 2023, but I guess never say never, as our favourite CEO says. I wanted to jump back across the pond from Pratt & Whitney in America to Ryanair in Europe, because they are apparently going to face another legal challenge. So they've had quite a lot of legal challenges, I feel, over the years in both directions, from them and to them. The latest one is a legal challenge against them, and that's coming from the European Privacy Advocates, NOYB, or None of Your Business. And this is all to do with facial recognition software. You know, I've never come across facial recognition software with Ryanair, but looking into the story, I quickly discovered why. So for a long time, Ryanair has been very, I don't know the right words that I can use to keep this podcast from having an explicit rating, but not very happy with people who are selling their flight tickets. They maintain that they are the only ones that should be allowed to sell their flight tickets. Countless times they've taken third-party ticket sellers to court, and they've been quite successful in stopping them from selling tickets. And of course, this became a real big problem during COVID, because usually they're quite isolated incidents. But then when Ryanair was suddenly emailing mass flight cancellations, you know, no one could really deal with it, and people weren't getting the emails. So apparently what's been happening is that Ryanair has been requiring passengers to verify that they have made these bookings with the third party companies. You know, they try not to, or they try to come across as not penalizing the customers, but rather the booking agents. But In order to verify the identity of people, Ryanair has been trying to use facial recognition and the airport check-in counters. So these verifications have been taking around a week and costing actually passengers up to 60 cents, which is probably about 60 cents in dollars as well. You know, Ryanair has defended its decision to verify customer contact details, you know, but it is interesting that if you book directly with the airline, you don't come across this, as I never have. You know, I want to book now with a third party to just see what happens. But anyway, back to the sort of legal drama. None of Your Business's program director is called Romain Robert, and he's called Ryanair's claims unjustified and invalid under GDPR, our lovely four-letter acronym that means you can't access half of the websites in America, even though, like, 10 years later, they claim they really care about their European viewers. but anyway, you know, Robert said they already have your contact details to send you the link to the verification process. A verification of contact details via biometrics also doesn't make a lot of sense. Your email address is not printed on your face or in your passport. Ryanair's verification process looks like another attempt to make the lives of travelers and competitors more complicated to increase profits. In a statement provided to Simple Flying, Ryanair noted its non-existent relationships with online travel agencies and frequent instances of malpractice negatively affecting consumers, and it confirmed that all of the processes that it has in place are fully compliant with current GDPR guidance. They told us, Ryanair has no commercial relationship with any OTA, nor are they authorized to sell our flights. OTAs scrape Ryanair's inventory and in many cases missell our flights and ancillary services. As a result, and in order to protect customers, any customers who book through an OTA are required to complete a simple customer verification process. I believe when they say scrape Ryanair's inventory, what's happening is, you know, you will book, say Stansted to Luxembourg on the third party website, and then the third party will go in and book that flight with Ryanair. They're not directly booking it, but you know, it will be interesting to see how this all plays out. I think I'm kind of seeing both sides of the story here. You know, like, I feel maybe Ryanair is going a bit too far in this whole verification process, but at the same time, you know, they've made it clear they don't want OTAs to be selling their inventory. So I think the OTAs are as much to blame for this as Ryanair is at this point.
Mm. I think the sad thing is it's the poor passenger that's having to provide photographic identification for no need because they didn't know they were supposed to buy through weren't supposed to buy through an OTA. So, you know, it should be made more clear at the point of purchase that that might be something they have to do.
Well, if you're listening to this podcast, don't use an OTA to book Ryanair.
At least our listeners are informed, all three of them. So some things people don't know about me. Everybody knows I live in Cornwall, but did you know I used to live in a place called Stroud? Now, Stroud is a lovely little hippie town in Gloucestershire, and I loved my time there. It was really good. Because of my time there, I'm pretty familiar with a certain energy company called Ecotricity. So based in Stroud, they were on a mission to end the use of fossil fuels. They're a significant supplier of green energy, primarily from a huge 87 megawatt wind power portfolio. And the company was founded about 30 years ago by a former New Age traveller by the name of Dale Vince. He's an outspoken environmentalist and he's got a huge personality. You know, if you live in Stroud, you can't get away from the guy. He's like, you know, a local celebrity, let's say. He's also the owner of Forest Green Rovers, the local football team, which is pegged to be the UK's greenest football club, if anybody's heard of them. Anyway, Dale now is onto a new venture and he wants to get into aviation. This might seem, you know, a bit contrary to his MO, but when you realise it's a completely electric airline that he wants to set up, it starts to make sense. So he's calling his new business EcoJet and he wants to make the world's first electric airline that is powered entirely by renewable energy. So in his words, he wants to make net zero emission-free air travel possible for the first time. So EcoJet's fleet will comprise conventional aircraft retrofitted with hydrogen electric powertrains. Once converted, they'll operate with the same power output as before, but with a 100% reduction in CO2 emissions. So this is interesting because the decision to repurpose old planes rather than build new ones from scratch, that in itself has a huge carbon saving to it. It's part of the argument I have for not buying a brand new electric car and continuing to drive my 20-year-old 1.3 car that's outside. Anyway, he reckons that this will save around 90,000 tonnes of carbon per plane by repurposing these older aircraft. The only byproducts, of course, will be water and makes it very green and efficient in terms of sustainable aviation. Dale has already partnered with an experienced pilot called Brent Smith and a team of aviation specialists to set up EcoJet, which he is styling as a flag carrier for Green Britain, not Great Britain. See the play on words there? Flights across the UK, he says, will commence early next year, starting with Edinburgh to Southampton and expanding to mainland Europe shortly after. And he's even got a vision for long-haul flights in the future. And it's not just the planes that will be green, because on board, further radical steps will be taken to reduce the impact of the industry, such as serving plant-based meals, eliminating single-use plastic, and issuing staff with environmentally friendly uniforms. Short-term, however, to secure his routes and a licence from the Civil Aviation Authority, EcoJet will have to launch using conventionally fuelled planes. So it's going to launch with two different sizes of turboprop aircraft. They haven't said exactly which, but they've said a 19-seat aircraft and a 70-seat aircraft. So, you know, you can get an idea of what they're going for there. These aircraft are hoped to be retrofitted with hydrogen electric powertrains as they become approved for service by the CAA. They're hoping the first retrofits will start in 2025, and then they'll be able to start their very green flights. Vince admitted he wasn't entirely happy with starting the project by burning fossil fuels, but said, you know, the airline needs to launch quickly in order to secure its planes, to secure its landing slots and keep up the momentum. He reckons that EcoJet, even when it does fly its hydrogen electric planes, will be able to price match existing airlines on airfares and hopes that it will attract a mass market, not just the environmentally conscious consumers. He's chucking in £1 million initially, but is going to be further raising funds next year. I know we hear about a lot of startup airlines and a lot of them turn out to be fairly bogus, or they don't really get off the ground, or they certainly don't end up being what their CEOs hoped them to be. But this is one that I actually really hope is a success. And I think, you know, the UK can do with more regional airlines. We're still missing Flybe. And if it can be completely sustainable, then why the hell not?
Yeah, well, I mean, 17 seats is a lot smaller than an A380, to say the least. But, you know, I think 2025 still seems way too soon for hydrogen engines, if you ask me, because we haven't even had a proper hydrogen engine flight yet, you know. And it's not just a case of certification, you know. They've got to, well, it is a case of certification, you know, but it's going to take a while to get these certified, because it's not just a case of you're taking a sort of semi-existing design, like, okay, you know, the 350 was a brand new plane, but it was based off of existing technologies, whereas hydrogen power is a completely new thing. It's going to need way more testing. So I think, you know, 2025 is a bit ambitious, I think, for hydrogen power, but good luck to him.
Absolutely. And I think the other issue there is the infrastructure required, because although he might have a nice big hydrogen tank somewhere in Stroud, there's no airport in Stroud, you know, and he's got his wind farms and everything. But you need to have that infrastructure at every airport you want to add to your network so that you can refuel when you land. And that's going to take a bit of time as well. But timeline aside, I think it's a nice thought. And yeah. Best of luck to him.
Definitely.
Anyway, I think that's all we've got time for on today's podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and welcome any feedback at editorial@simpleflying.com.
For more great content, you can visit our website at simpleflying.com or find us on social media. Simply search for Simple Flying.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a rating on your favourite podcast player. Thanks for listening.
Bye.